and handing the bear to the United States International University be halted until such time as the people of Oregon have the opportunity to hear from their legislators on this matter. It has also come to our attention that Elliot Richardson's office of ATW had never received word that the legislature was requesting a hearing on Adair. Council of Poor has asked me as chairman of Adair's committee to help us in this matter. As you know, the Council of Poor has representation from, and I list the following counties. Sir, it has been quite some time since the Chicanos and the Poor have requested your attention on this matter. December 9, 1969, it was first brought before the public at Corvallis. Corvallis businessmen did not acknowledge our request and ignored us when we were present at one of their meetings. The Council of the Poor has now also been ignored. Poor people have been asking the resource people that your administration employs to solve the poor people's problems be requested to help the poor help themselves. One does not help the poor to help themselves if they do not give the poor the tools they need to help themselves. Giving them facilities like Adair would enable them to be creative and innovative in attempting to solve their own problems. Giving them token help by welfare systems that create dependency is not a solution. Excluding them from an understanding of the system and how it works gives them the feeling of frustration that is even now present in reference to Adair. Agencies that continually use the poor by receiving funds for them, which are used, so that institutions supported by these agencies may be preserved, are immoral and should be reevaluated. For some time, the Chicanos themselves have been used like this, as you recall, and still not enough is being done. If we are to avoid some disturbance like those that occurred at Watts, Detroit, and Los Angeles, I ask you to reconsider the decision concerning the Adair transfer. Please re-examine Mr. Faustage's recommendation, which may have been given without any complete audit, and remember that it is his responsibility to protect the taxpayers' interests. Please request the USIU and ATW to delay the transaction and to respect the wishes of the Council of the Poor and the Oregon Legislature to allow a hearing on Adair. We also had the opportunity to meet the man who is responsible for USIU, Dr. William Rutt. We went to Corvallis, and he talked there, and he gave a very Christian speech on turning the other cheek. He did not speak on Adair. So to Dr. William Rutt, we are addressing this letter. Dear Mr. Rutt, in hearing your speech at Corvallis on January 28, 1971, I was moved by the fact that you seem to want to embody Christian principles. According to these principles, I am reminding you of St. Paul's epistle to the Corinthians 13:13, where he speaks saying that of all the virtues you may have, if you do not have love, etc. This I ask you out of love for the poor of their being oppressed. There are 145,000 low-income people in the state of Oregon. Allow them the opportunity to develop something of their own choosing at Adair. We have received enough information to realize that you are a financial genius and a very influential man. Hearing you speak has given me hope that you are also a generous man. We appeal to your concern and request that you rescind your request for Adair and that you allow the people of Oregon, specifically the poor people of Oregon, to come up with a solution to part of their problem. Please do not get concerned over the deterioration of buildings at the expense of the deterioration of humanity. Do not protect the institution at the expense of students who are people, who are Christians, who are your brothers. Thank you for your consideration. And these I'm only reading to let you know that we are going up the ladder. But many times the people react in a frustrated way, like the committee report on disorders in the United States has indicated. It is because constantly the poor have this door slammed in their face constantly. The question that gets slammed back on us all the time is, how are you going to support us? Why should the Oregon Council of the Poor receive use of Adair? I feel that the people that follow me will be able to answer these. I have written here, it is obvious that USIU will not provide a payroll for the Corvallis area nor pay any taxes. The benefits to the Oregonians from a USIU takeover of Adair are zero. On the contrary, the Oregon Council of the Poor are poor Oregonians, unemployed or unskilled and badly paid, ill-housed, and using up state revenue for welfare payments that do not help the poor end their poverty or dependence on the state. Council of the Poor use of Adair for universities of the poor would give the 145,000 Oregonians listed being below federal poverty guidelines a chance to help themselves. Not all of the 145,000, but at least it's a start, an attempt to help the poor help themselves. In the short run, this would be of a tremendous help to those now clogging the welfare roll. If you notice, I'm using the same arguments many times legislators use against it. I constantly say that. In the long run, it would greatly reduce state expenditures by removing heads of household and their families from dependence on welfare payments and other state services. Most importantly, ADARE would be used to help Oregonians, not as another element in the real estate holding empire masquerading as a university. And here is where Ms. Rada Scott would like to talk about how this could be financed.
Are there any questions, of course? Any questions?
I'd like to permit me to come back. I'd like to have Mr. Morrison speak, and then I'll come back to questions.
Okay. You want to start now?
I promise I won't go through all this information. I am Rada Scott from Hood River and have been working with the Oregon Household Report for almost a year now. I don't know if you felt the same way that I did when you saw that film. It's a very emotional type of thing to me, because when you realize the hundreds of poor in Oregon, when this facility is there in Oregon, and what the poor want to utilize Camp ADARE for, it becomes a very emotional type of thing. We discovered last week in our investigation of ADARE that all of those houses, 150 homes, are now being heated, and they have been for the last 2 years. That the electricity capacity is running at half capacity now by heating the homes and the buildings. And yet we see people that are turned out of their homes, and it is a very emotional type of thing. We expect to see for ADARE as a university vocational type training for the poor in Oregon. One of the programs that we hope to see on this would be basic adult education, GED. College preparation classes, because regardless of what many people think, we have many poor that are college material, but they have not the preparation to go on to college. These are things that we want to see about. I think one of the particular things that the community, what has been so very unique about this whole thing, is because the poor have done the planning of it. The poor have decided what they felt that was the real need of the poor in Oregon. They had planned on this particular thing of educational, vocational program. Vocational, which would include agriculture, mechanics, electricians, plumbing, TV repair, journalism, food services, office manager, radio TV announcers, and TV work, and teacher's aides, office work, nurse's aides, making a specialized craft, carpentering, woodworking. These are the type of classes that would be provided on the university. We have contacted Lynn Benton College and the president, and he said he saw absolutely no reason why we couldn't set up satellite classes. Would be very little cost whatsoever to the recipient. When we're talking about living on ADARE, we're talking about 2,000 people to begin with. There is 152 homes. There are also four dormitories that can be utilized for single students as well as senior citizens, even a rehabilitation type service for senior citizens, where such as also Skid Row and like this, where these senior citizens can be brought in and become for once a part of the community, where they will at last find a place in a community. And in return for rent and this type of thing, they can work in the community, keeping up the yards and doing repair work and this type. There is cafeteria, that food, meals shall be supplied for these particular people. The revenue, as Pablo had mentioned, on these houses at $80 a month would be $144,000 a year income on the house. If the dormitory, which would house close to 300 persons, if these were utilized at $25 per person, would almost be $2,000 income off of this property. And this is, granting, these are individual rooms. Of three dormitories. The one dormitory has apartments, which are about 50 apartments in this one dormitory that could be used for couples. And one of the very hard things, we had close to 75 people in the last month that had been writing up a proposal to ACW. One of the very serious problems we have been faced with is that we have been unable. We were given one tour of Canadair. This was by the representative of the university, and he drove us through, but we were not able to tour any of the buildings to know which buildings we could use for what type of program. Also with the housing, we were allowed to see three houses. And then an incident came up which we were not responsible, and they finally realized that we were not, and this was denied us to continue through the housing. And it's frustrating, to say the least, because I feel that if we had this cooperation, we could have even a greater proposal than we have already. We have a rough one now, and we were hoping to submit this to ATW this weekend. And we don't know exactly where we stand now. Other specialized training that we want to see in this, and again, I want to emphasize, this is what the people in meetings have told us that they feel that they need to be able to become taxpayers in Oregon. They want training in legislative procedures, legal rights, civil responsibilities, prenatal care, postnatal care, money management, home ownership, consumer protection, family planning, abundant food cookery. They want to know how to send out newsletters to those in the community, and they want to develop cooperatives. We have had cooperation from NICED, which is a cooperative in Northern California that very much would like to set up an office in Oregon and actually establish cooperatives on the base. These particular cooperative would be in the form of food. Now, these are cooperatives that are set up for the poor, that are run by the poor, and these the poor from all over the state could come and utilize these particular cooperatives. They would be set up in food, clothing, pharmacy, housing, new car buying, mutual insurance, arts and crafts, garage and repair, hardware, variety, and agriculture. These are established cooperatives in the United States now, so we are not going into a field that has not been already established, but these have been established and they're working, and they have been very beneficial to the poor. We have very great interest in having a daycare for the parents that are living on the center in this type. And I know, and we have the proposal of the International University, which I think this committee everyone should have a copy of this particular thing, because I think reading of their proposal will be an eye opener, because I was absolutely amazed when I saw it, because it said nothing, and I could not understand ATW even considering it. One person from the state office that had read this said that the only thing that he could understand how a proposal of this kind could be, and he is expert in this particular line, he said the only reason that he could ever see that a proposal like this would be passed is that they had already given it away, and they needed paper stating this. But I would suggest that you would get a copy of this proposal that the university has written, because it is an eye-opener itself. But one of the areas that VML, Valley Migrant League, has requested permission to have their offices on Adair. Also, we NICED from California, the cooperative, would like to start, open a state office here. I have talked to some of the people from rehabilitation that have expressed interest in this particular thing. Also, that this would be set up as a convention center for making money for the Oregon Council of the Poor. Right now, the Oregon Community Action Council is holds their different meetings at quite exclusive places because of being able to have meeting space. One of the ideas of the Oregon Council of the Poor that they should utilize and would be able to utilize for the fees that they are now paying, which would include accommodations as well. This was another means that we thought of raising money for this particular thing. The stores, the buildings, all are there to start the things that we need to. And I think it is so very, very necessary. When I stopped to think of, I would say close to 100 people in the last month have given their vacation time, have taken off work, have given their Saturdays and Sundays to come and to write this proposal. And it is something very, very dear to them, because it is, for once, the poor able to say, we want to do something for ourselves. We don't want to be on welfare. We want to be able to be educated ourselves so that we can go out and make a decent living. This Campadere would not only be training people on the days, but on weekends it would be having seminars on the different programs that I had mentioned, and even in cooperatives where they would be trained and then go back into their communities and start these things in their own communities. So it would be a continual training session that we would be doing on Campadere. And I'm very grateful and I'm very thankful for Leroy Owens that this possibility was made, because it is a great need. I can see this as a pilot program in Oregon. This has never been done in the United States before. And for Oregon to have this feather in their cap, to me, it would be an outstanding thing. I've talked to many that are in high places that have said this is something I've never heard of it before. Yet it can be done, because we're working with a group of people that can do it. The university said it would cost between $200,000 and $250,000 for them to move into Campadere. It will not cost that for the poor, because the poor will be painting the buildings, the poor will be taking care of the grounds and cleaning the grounds up, and this type of thing. They're not asking. They're asking for property, but they're not asking for a handout. They're asking to be able to help themselves, and this is what's so very necessary. It's their dignity that they're asking for. They're not asking for welfare, but they're asking for a chance to be able to help themselves. I thank you.
Question for the
Yes, one of the particular things that we were talking about is the housing, where we had the same understanding that the other person had mentioned about the housing, that there would be very little cost on this housing when it was finally turned over by the Air Force. So this is revenue that can be very easily used to sponsor this. It would bring it up to almost $154,000, I think, that from the housing alone that would be revenue through the year. Also, there would be the different offices that are open there that would be rented out. And there would also be the convention center and this type of thing that we're working on.
haven't got a room, I apologize for not being here, but do I understand the city council on board? They want this, not as their own, because it's on purchase basis. You'd like to have government turn it over to the council on board.
Well, actually, if you were serious, if anyone was serious about helping the poor, it would mean something like this. Of course, it's revolutionary.
Probably not.
So I don't think this is the issue right now. The issue is...
How you going to acquire it?
Yeah, well, this committee, right now, for Oregonians, kind of resolved to put a halt to the other side of coming in until Oregonians get a chance to reevaluate. I think that's the issue. And I think later on, after this committee would do that and put it before the House, we'll be glad to answer those other questions in detail.
Ms. Representative Person, I think what we're asking for is that we're asking for the same privilege that the university is being given now without cost. If you give us, if we can acquire a dare, we'll see that it is that we can carry the financial standpoint.
Yeah, well, I recognize that a lot of talent among the people, you know, and you've evidenced that. But the hard-headed pragmatists that we refer to as bureaucrats back in Washington, they want to know what your alternative plan is if they hold up on this other one, and that's the only reason I was asking.
We do have the same identical application that was written by the university. We have that. That's right here. And so that we filled out an application the same way that USIU kind of held it, so that we're going by their bylaws, by their regulations, and it's there for them to chop us some more. But the deal is, it is there. And like I said, Mr. Owens will have a copy of that, along with the proposal, so all of you can see.
Mr. Owens does have a copy or will have?
Right now, I'm going to give it to him.
This is in a rough state right now, and we're hoping to finish it up within the week.
Then,
I'm a little unclear on one point. Is it the proposal of the Council on the Poor to, in effect, be creating a state agency and facility?
Actually, what we're really saying is, right now, there is state use of that property. Fish and Hatchery, State Fish Hatchery, has use of those facilities right now. There are some buildings being used right now. We're saying that there is resources right now in this state that could probably work through it. And part of the whole thing here is ATW is an educational, thing, so that we would really like for it to go through the education system and such. But at the same time, the poor are asking for enough flexibility and to allow innovativeness and talent to grow there. And actually, the poor are asking Oregon to make history too, because it has never been done in the United States. It's always token.
No, well, what I'm saying is, you talked about revenue and things like that, and to me, the implication was that this would be, kind of a quasi state agency. Is that true, or will this be a private facility?
At this time, like I said, I wouldn't like to go away from the issue. Because this is just the kind of thing that sometimes is used to frustrate the poor more. If you notice, even the media will pick up things that will frustrate the issue.
I think one of the very important issues on this is that we have no vocational training for the poor in Oregon. The poor are suggesting a way that we can have vocational training on a large basis for our 144,000 poor in Oregon. And I think this is the thing that we really need to zero in on.
And really the issue being questioned for the legislators. And I know it's going to be very difficult because I know that, for instance, there's only, one out of 34 Republicans signed for this petition. The realistic of it is that there's only one Republican in this committee here. That means that logistically or pragmatically, Republicans are going to have to learn more about this. It would be tremendous if we could have more Republicans to sit with and talk to. Right now, we're talking to one Republican, I think. We'd like for further investigation for USIU, for instance. The statement may be statement. USIU has little available ready funds. It has had to ask for postponement and retain federal loans and matching grants that it has already received. There is over 1 million discrepancy in its financial reports for 1968-69 year concerning the number of students it claims to have and the income it has received from student tuition. Its enrollment multiplied by its tuition cost is over $1 million greater than its listed tuition income. USIU has few, if any, students on its campuses other than the main San Diego campus. For example, on its English campus, each student has a whopping 5 acres to himself. USIU, in effect, is a vast landholding enterprise that keeps skeleton crews of students around in order to get tax-exempt status as an educational institution. A small number of trustees, including the university president, have an unusually wide degree of control over the finances of the university. According to attorneys consulted by Mr. Morrison, all the assets of the university could easily wind up in the personal possession of the trustees. This is especially crucial with regard to the Mexican subsidiary of USIU, manned by a skeleton student body of less than 40 students. There are almost no regularity laws governing corporations in Mexico, and here I need not comment in terms of how she comes. All of these facts hardly add up to a picture of a healthy and sound university. All of the above and much more has been published in the statement. No one from the USIU or from ATW, incidentally, has challenged the accuracy of Mr. Morrison's reporting. Therefore, we can assume the above to be an accurate picture of USIU. Judging by past behavior of the university, we can see that it will only open a token campus at Adair in order to retain use of the base. Given its strained financial position, it can hardly do otherwise. It will therefore not provide a healthy payroll for the Corvallis area. The reason Governor McCall and the Corvallis Citizens Committee gave for supporting the university, nor will it pay any property taxes. Let me note here, in other words, the fact that the reason we keep on mentioning Governor McCall is because it was Governor McCall that came out in the paper supporting this. Therefore, Oregon will not benefit from a USIU takeover. Only USIU will benefit. The university should be required to show in detail how it plans to open a campus there in light of its strained financial position. We have also since learned that USIU may have secretly disposed of its holdings in England, known as Dropmore Estate. Dropmore. As early as December 1st, 1969, at a meeting of USIU trustees, University President Rust was given authority to dispose of the property. Minutes of that meeting can be obtained by this body to verify that. At the very least, USIU has not been candid about its financial status, nor about how it can possibly make use of Adair. This is not to mention the Sundance Air Force Base it has also just acquired in Wyoming. I'd like to call on Mr. Morrison to have the facts presented.
Would you want me?
Go ahead.
Well, I would want to comment to talk about it before we get through. You've commented several times, Pablo, about the problem of the press emphasizing things that other than you'd like. You share that problem with a lot of lesson letters around here.
You're not to sell papers, you recognize that.
Being a member of the press, I recognize that too. I think we have a real serious problem, gentlemen. The Oregon statement has documented a very solid case and has continued to document more.
All right, let's start for the record with your name.
I'm Alan J. Morrison. I'm a staff writer for the Oregon statement. Have been since 1967. The Oregon statement feels very strong about the issue, not who gets there, opposed to one group over the other, but is very concerned about the university itself, namely the corporate structure and the past transactions of this university. The Oregon Statesman publishers, the company itself, the editors, have told me to do anything possible, including testifying before this committee, as recently as a few hours ago. I quickly gathered some necessary documents. I had no knowledge I was going to be here. But have been requested by everybody, the United States National Bank, the senators, United States senators, many, many educators to do this, not only in Oregon, but in California. We have a tremendous volume of information documented. I've gone on television and made strong statements. We've made strong statements in the Oregon statement. We have a multi-million dollar investment stake in this. And Statesman doesn't go on the limb unless he knows what's doing. And I'll assure you, we know what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And I challenge Dr. Russ, the president of the United States University, the board of trustees of that university, or the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare to challenge any statement that we've made so far. We have it fully documented. We have a case that's airtight, and not only documented once, but double, triple, and backed up all the way. Our paper has not heard one word from this university since it began a series of basic articles. We didn't end those articles. We closed out a basic series. We're still continuing to investigate. We have much more information, and it's all serious. So, believe me. Most of the information presented by various people here, including some of your own legislators and other people, I think they do correct. There have been some problems in language and some of the things I maybe don't clear up for you. For instance, we talk about KFAR housing as opposed to the United States International University transfer of property from Adair to that university. These are separate, and so is the sewage and water treatment plant. These are all separate deeds, very much so, quick claim deeds from the United States government to various agencies. The university is getting 257.37 acres in its quitclaim deed, plus 35 buildings. Before I go any further, I'd like to say that I haven't checked this out thoroughly with our publishers, but if this committee wants any of our documents, I'm sure it'll be all right to present it and maybe save some time this way, where you can have time to study, analyze, catches, as we have.
Chairman, I'd like to get copies. We would like very much to get copies of those documents.
They authorized me to testify before this committee within the realms of libel, but I didn't ask them specifically about the documents, but they've been most gracious of showing congressmen and representatives of congressmen these documents. Even one who was on the other side from the fence, a representative, saw and looked and said he'd seen enough, but he didn't change his mind. We hear a lot about United States International University. I'll bet not too many people really understand this university as we have. We started out to clear the record of who we're supporting or if we're supporting anyone in this. We started out investigating United States International University in late August, shortly after the land was declared surplus. That was declared surplus, I believe the date was August 14th. We have the documents to support this. We did it because we thought it was a big thing for the Mid-Willamette Valley. We thought it was we knew some background. We thought it was a growing, innovative, exciting program for learning. We thought because of our circulation area, our interest in this Corvallis area, that this would be a story we should go after. Because we thought it was something new, we were a little wondering, or had some questions about why a university would want to locate right next to another fully accredited and historic university such as Oregon State, a few miles from Mendez Community College, just a few miles down the road from Oregon College of State, and with a relative few miles of another Methodist affiliated college from Miami University. But we felt there was some justification for this. They may have offered something different in the line of learning, behavior programs. So we began to get information on this university. We launched we thought it was a cinch program to get the information from their public relations department. We found that the public relations department, Mr. Philip Bernstein, who was then director, resigned the other day, said that he didn't really get involved in the negotiations with AIR or the negotiations with the university. Matter of fact, he didn't really do anything at all. He didn't write press releases unless it was to write something about the acquisition of a big mansion in England to show all the trustees how they're doing it, or prepare some color slides on the Mexican campus. But he admitted to me he'd never read a single resolution passed by the trustees in all these 2.5 years he was there. He was the longest tenure of a public relations director they ever had, because they had about a dozen before that. They had many, many business managers resign, dismiss, very strange job turnover in high management places. And we have many statements to support this. For instance, I'll read you a document. But these are all from the minutes, which incidentally, none of the minutes are ever mailed out to the Board of Trustees in advance. In fact, they're not even hardly handed to them at the meeting. And if they do get a minute at the meeting, there's somebody always there to pick them up before they leave. Very, very careful about this. The station did an extensive search to get these minutes to reconstruct this whole thing. We're still getting them. As late as Monday of this week, I just received the missing July 8, 1969 minutes, and the December 1st, 1969 minutes, and the December 14th, 1970 minutes. We never had these before. They arrived after extensive letters and inquiries and actual physical searches. I'd like you to read just a portion of the June 24th, 1968 minutes. By the way, we have the original minutes too. And it states the problem to be resolved in this resolution is that the university frequently, excuse me, that's an editorial word, receives gifts in the form of stocks and securities and wants to dispose of those immediately in the interest of the university. This was a whereas the problem existed. Now listen to the solution to this problem. Be it resolved that United States International University be, and it hereby is, authorized and empowered to open and maintain an account with Merrill, Lynch, Pierce, Fenner, and Smith Incorporated, and its successors by merger, consolidation, or otherwise, and assigns hereafter called a broker for the purchase and sale of stocks, bonds, securities, and exchanges on which the brokers are members or otherwise, and any of the officers hereafter named. Anyway, they go on to set up the total account with this firm. And it says, can call up written or verbal instruction by telephone or telegraph or otherwise at any time, day and night, the broker to buy or sell stocks, bonds, securities, either for immediate or future delivery. And if he deems it proper to secure payment therefore with property of this corporation, he shall at all times have authority in every way. This is referring to Dr. President William Russ, by the way, and it will maintain it later. He shall at all times have authority in every way to bind and obligate this corporation for carrying out any contract, arrangement, or transaction which shall for or on behalf of this corporation be entered into or made with or through the brokers, and the brokers are authorized to receive from this corporation checks and drafts drawn upon the funds of this corporation by any officer or employee of this corporation, and to apply the same to the credit of this corporation or to account with said brokers, and the said brokers are authorized to receive from said officer or officers or from any other officer or employee of this corporation stocks, bonds, or other securities for the account of this corporation with said brokers, and said brokers are further authorized to accept instructions from any officer, now listen to this, hereafter named as to delivery of stocks, bonds, or other securities from the account of this corporation, and his discretion to cause certificates of stocks, bonds, or other securities held in said account to be transferred the name of any officer hereafter named, or of this corporation, discretion of said officer, and delivered to any such officer as such stocks, bonds, securities issued and directed by him shall be deemed delivered to this corporation. I won't go on, but names of people who are hereafter referred to as Dr. William C. Russ, President, Mr. John M. Cranston, Chairman of the Board, a longtime San Diego lawyer, reaching his later years of retirement, apparently. Now, we took this resolution by taking out the names to various brokers of various prominent firms, including the firm mentioned here, without their knowledge. They didn't know who it was, whose resolution it was. Remember that in the minute, it says that this firm requested this resolution. We showed that, and this is the type of comment received from this: dangerous, reckless, irresponsible, inconceivable, impossible, and it goes on and on and on. I had to almost laugh when some of the consultants reported this, because one of the firm's own officials in New York and the lawyers, it was their own resolution. I was told in September, when I first got a hold of these minutes, by Mr. William Weidman, he's the senior executive accountant for Merrill in this firm listed in San Diego. He told me at the time, I called him, that was standard form, standard resolution for that company. And he said, if you don't, I expressed some doubts in it. I, at that time, was quite naive in this situation, and I did express doubts. That was sort of off open door, and he referred me to a lawyer in New York, in the legal department, by name, phone number, extension. He too supported that detention, that was a standard form. We then later on asked the United States Senator to ask for a request from this same individual the standard form used by that company for nonprofit institutions. We received that. Entirely different. Very much restricted and tight, like any standard stock transfer in a nonprofit corporation that wants to be controlled. This was in late September. I again asked him about this after we armed with the material we had and the consultants and their own firm. I approached this individual again on the telephone. He again tried to convince me that was the standard form. I then told him I knew it wasn't. Requested an explanation of this. And he was very concerned that we take this to the Securities and Exchange. That is being done right now, and their lawyers are very interested in this Securities Exchange. This, I use that one thing as an example, because I don't want to take a lot of time, and I could better well let you people look for yourself, examine the documents. And I know that one of the speakers here, Mr. Beta, referred to stories to Mr. Elson, who was the property deputy under secretary for Elliot Richardson. And I've talked to Mr. Elson on a number of occasions, and he said to, apparently, I don't know if it's hearsay to me, but Pablo and just said that they referred those stories as a lie that we printed. They have not told us that, and they will not say that to us. I wish they would. The university, the best it said so far, or the worst you might say, is speaking about it that way, is they thought the stories were very unprofessional. But we have no contact with any federal agency, ATW, Mr. Richardson, Mr. Elson, or the university itself since those series articles started. Someone referred to the campus in England. If you look at the December 1st, 1969 meeting, their catalog, the 1970-72 catalog, will talk all about the campuses overseas. Show us some nice pictures. Tell you about West Windsor Castle's historic site frequently visited by students at USIU in England. If you look all through this, you'll never see Gotmore Mansion or any mention of this campus. So you get to the back of the page. Tell you about another castle. Historic Westminster Abbey is within easy reach of USIU campus in England. Now I refer you to the December 1st, 1969 minutes. I'll make one statement. I don't know what it means. I'll try it in a minute. Dr. Russ indicated because of the regulations, it is possible to build so little on the Dropmore property. is becoming doubtful that it's feasible. Now therefore be resolved that the executive committee of the board of trustees hereby authorize the sale and convey the university's campus in England said property commonly called Dropmore Park for such price upon such terms and conditions as the executive committee deems proper, and further resolve that the executive committee of this board of trustees is hereby authorized to vest the officers of the university with authority to purchase for this university the property of Sussex, England, commonly known as Ashdown Park, Witch Cross, near Forest Row, consisting of approximately 185 acres. The other Dropmore is 500 acres. The old Lord Kemsley estate would be compared to Randolph Hearst in this country, a journalism tycoon, and they acquired it in this estate and he died. 185 acres for the sum of £275,000 English, and to borrow such part or all the purchase price at such rate of interest upon such terms as they deem proper, and to give a security, therefore, a mortgage deed of trust upon said real estate. No one even knows for sure how many houses are out there. The military police and the oxygen commit people assure me, and Oregonian reporter was long made an actual house count. They said 131. If there is, somebody sold about 20 of them, because there's supposed to be 152 out there, according to Spanish finance. We started to get interested in this when GSA told us none of our business inquired about the private property of the private mortgage held by the Washington State Teacher Siren System. And Robert Neal, the acting director of surplus property, was charged with a disposal of their that part of it there to the United States International University and all the rest of the Tim Linder. I was told by the acting director, everybody's acting these days, Charles Treat of Western Zone 10, that Mr. Robert Neal certainly knows all about this because he's going to be the one who handles it. When I asked the first question, which was dug out by Willis, the Eugene Register Guard reporter, because I understand he got frustrated in his research and ended it, I don't blame you. I wish I had it. So many inconsistencies with the university itself. When the Methodist Church had control of that university, when Bishop Kennedy was in command, they couldn't even get an enrollment figure from President Russ. 2 years, they never got an enrollment figure and never did see an audit. And it's today that's true. I talked to Mrs. Catherine Stone. She'd be a real neutral member of the board, sort of inclined to go along with this miracle man, Dr. Russ. And she said that she had never seen an audit in her life, and she didn't think anybody else did. Now, I'm not positive, and nor any of our lawyers and people that consulted how many corporations they got. I asked Mr. Robert S. Dunn, the vice president and a lawyer before this of this university, how many corporations do you have? I see the United States government, the Treasury Department told you to merge those two. You had two operating for 2 years. They told the origin to merge them at a private operating against a nonprofit. It's about the most dangerous thing you can have. And they merged them according to the merger agreement. But our researchers in San Diego and people we hired from Sacramento Bee in Sacramento are not convinced that this was ever very well accomplished in as far as control purposes, although there were 68 pages of restated articles that even the clerks of 20 and 30 years there couldn't figure out and said, you'll have to have your lawyers look this one over. We are. But it is the strangest, I don't mind saying this, university that I've ever examined. I started out looking at the surface of a university thinking it's real easy to write a story about this big international expanding program. And I wondered when I looked in the bowels, after I couldn't get any information on the top, and looked in the bowels, exactly what I was looking at. To me, it looks like a giant real estate holding company. For instance, it has more land than the Oregon State researchers, and then we had lots of people and spent lots of money in this project for 4 months, can even describe. We can't get enough title researchers and people to dig out all the property they own. It's too bad. Not only in this country, but in Mexico, England, we think maybe India, Japan, and every place else. We know a lot of this country. I just, for accident, said I looked at a resort area, and that's where they always buy property, so I called San Diego County Assessor and put the name in the computer. Here, I'll pop the United States International. I think I can do it in about any county in the country. They open up campuses and close them down. What the statements were made about their, we have certified figures in ACW, which were hard to get because they kept getting information to the university despite letters that I had to tell Mr. Richardson that we didn't want any information this way anymore. We wanted the information on actual federal knowledge through your regional offices, U.S. Office of Education. But we got an investigation launched Friday, January 22nd, after all this material was turned over to Kelly Richardson, which he said sounded serious to him. He appointed Saul Ellison, his deputy, who's a property utilization man, and my personal friend is Bill Russ, so I can get this study done in a week for you. I don't know how he did it, because it took us months and months and had lots of people involved. And we have much more information than the United States government on this university. I'll guarantee you that. I'll make that challenge to Mr. Saul Ellison anytime he wants it. And we've proven that to him once. We could prove it to him again. Mr. Richardson, I think, would even agree with that. And I think that prompted one of the editorial comments that came out of the statement that the federal government's become a dinosaur with too big for its, you know, for its brain. It can't keep up with all the local, and I don't mean it's critical of the federal government. It just can't keep up with all the things going on. It's too much federalism, too much federal control, and they lose it. The U.S. Office of Education thinks that the university should be investigated and then produces evidence of why. It can't make payments, it misses payments, it asks for extensions of payments of government loans, and then misses those, and says it's because our revenues are not high at the time your payment dates are due. The U.S. Office of Education says, change them. We can't set them by law. We can't set those payment dates by federal statutes. Put them anywhere you want them. Well, this goes on and on. It's absolutely a thing that I think Oregon and you people, and I'm saying this from the bottom of my heart, and a statement I'm sure would concur all the way, that you look at this thing very, very thoroughly. And I don't mean because someone's going to grab some land. Because, for instance, the University of Oregon has 14,700 students on 240 acres of land. We know they got at least 3,000 acres of land, though a multi-campus approach. The University of Washington is operating on 640 acres of land, has 40,000 students. The certified figure from HEW at September fall enrollment shows this university to have about 3,800 students. There are 79 students at Alpine College. Now, this was an old private college that's acquired by the United States International University in 1969 because it was having financial trouble, like most private colleges. And they acquired this. It's in Steamboat Springs, Colorado. Very nice area and everything, but it just couldn't make it financially. They acquired that. They had several hundred students in the campus at the time, and as the fall of 1970, when we made their body count on that campus, there were 79 students. England, 500-acre, big university center abroad, 107 students. And then we found out later, they're selling that and moving on. Now they're closing Alpine College, and according to the minutes here, and according to their own statements, the letter to our editor, they're closing that down because it just didn't work out. And they're moving on to Sundance Air Force Base in Wyoming. And they got 55 acres there and 75 buildings. And it says on their application, and by the way, those applications that have been described by various people, you don't need any money to get surplus land. Don't worry about it. That's a misnomer. That's not important to have any money to develop it. Because not only will the government give it to you, but then they'll turn around and loan you money on it and release the conditioned subsidy, as they did in the case of Elliott Marine Base, 400 acres down there. And they planted a $3,691,000 loan on that and covered 50.56 acres of that. And later in 1969, that was done in February the 21st, 1968, and in January of the following year, in 1969, they raised that encumbrance to $5,304,063.31. And then they got federal grants on top of that to build new buildings, and they move on to buy more land in Mexico, in England, in Colorado. They're now buying more land in Colorado, and they're closing down their campus. They're negotiating for more land in Colorado, in Steamboat Springs, they're closing down their low-potential high-achiever campus. They say it didn't work out there, and they're moving on to Sundance, Wyoming. And on their Sundance application, it says, we'll need additional land. Always we'll need additional land. We'll need additional money. We'll have to have some help money-wise. And you can see this throughout their whole system. And all their board amendments are either filled with, we're acquiring more land, closing the campus up, buy another one, or setting up bank accounts, and they have more bank accounts than you can imagine. I couldn't follow the line of credit. Even bank presidents have had difficulty in following where the line of credit goes. But it goes all over the world, from Midland in England to Mexico City to Africa and Nairobi to everywhere, stretches bank accounts. Banks, land, no students. And I can see why they don't get any students. And Dr. Carl Rogers pretty much hit that on the nose. He said, because they have a code of policy here, we have, that allows that any faculty or student can be dismissed without cause or reason, without due process. And Dr. Rogers, an international known psychologist who was on the staff of the Graduate School of Human Behavior at this university, resigned and asked his name to be completely removed from any publicity. And I have his letter here, a four-page letter, because he said he only finds it a statement of policies in a dictator-type country. He couldn't understand this because Dr. Ruff had always been a liberal educator. But, go ahead.
Is this information covered in the package that you're going to give us, or think you're going to give us?
Yes, I...
Did you say we would get it, or are you going to have to check for it?
I said that I thought it would be all right. We have shown it to various people, you know, and there doesn't seem to be any strings on this.
Is there any form of an outline with it? Do you have any concerns? Or does it follow your newspaper?
We're lucky to have our minds intact, Jack, after this one. But we started the indexes. I didn't mean it that way. We were indexed up one time, and then when city various editors and consultants had to take material away for study, for review, it was too much because I didn't have a full-time secretary, so we merely filed it all in a big package. And I can reconstruct it. It would take me...
Maybe
a day.
Sometime next week?
Yes, definitely.
You adequately demonstrated to me and the other staff that we ought to study this thing a heck of a lot more. And I would like very much to get as much information from you as you have with you.
Right.
I also asked, I'd like to get a copy, and I'm guessing Representative Owen from Mr. Willis's article from the Register Guard.
I didn't mean to go this far and hit on some details, but I did it for a purpose. I thought you'd see some concern of our paper and many other people. And also, I thought possibly, this time is the SEC. They're in the process now. I'll explain a little bit about this, and then you can ask some questions. We do know a lot about the procedure, the transfer, and all this. Paul Elson, they have the documents all signed to go to deed, the quitclaim. They're all ready to go. Mainly, it's a question of filing in Benton County, recording them there, sign them, file them in Benton County, record them, make it legal. This could happen tomorrow. It may be happening right now. It could very well be. All the legal necessary steps have been followed in the transfer. The governor signs off, which is one. The only way this could be quickly stopped is if I'm no lawyer, but we have legal research in this question. Possibly if the governor removes his name from the sign off, pending his review or your review. Now, the only other thing is that, you see, United States Airlines University has a separate division of people. A very expertise division of people working to get surplus property, not just land, but equipment. They have a regular division that this is the South. They have a man in GSA in Auburn, Washington, a United States International University graduate, who does nothing but keep tip-off on surplus properties. He's in control. Representative Robert Wilson in San Diego has a son, a graduate, or is graduating now at the 1969 University, and he provides the support up in the ACW level to get these through fast. I'll give you a good example. When I inquired through GSA in Seattle about the private mortgage and found out that it was held by Washington State Retirement System, I talked to Robert Ryder, the manager of that system, the same day. And he said, "Why are you requesting this information?" He's cooperating. I said, "Well, didn't you hear that their base, where you have a $1,700,000 mortgage, is being transferred, 207 acres of it, and the housing in a separate deed is coming transferring behind it on either a fair market value or an educational discount system. If you ever hear educational discount system, just say that's free. Don't let that word confuse you, educational discount price, because that's free when it's said that way.
But I think we really have enough examples. I've got a couple of questions. I think the
committee. Go ahead.
In lieu of taking a week to whatever it would take to make an outline of this, do you know if you would be available quicker than that, tomorrow or the next day, to sit down and talk about this?
Yes, I'm sure. My paper told me to do everything possible to assist you people.
Secondly, have you talked to Senator Hatfield since this popped yesterday or the day before?
No, not directly.
You don't have a reaction from him, correct?
I merely in press releases that were handed out by him. I know his feelings, of course.
Questions of the committee? Mr. Denmore,
wondering aloud, the governor's office has been mentioned several times in the course of this discussion. Would it be possible to have a representative of the governor's staff on this meeting?
I did get a case and asked Mr. Fulton what he thought of my story. He's been doing the review for the governor and been down to campus on several cases. He said they were factually true. He only had 2 points he would contend with. One was a judgment thing about using something, and the other was he had disagreed with my statement that he recommended the United States International University to the governor for approval. And I used that from the statement. He said it's no DuPont. It's a tight fiscal thing they're on, but it's the best we got. If there's anything else, might as well use it. And another misconception that maybe has concerned you people about the deterioration of buildings and equipment and the sewage treatment plant, water, and all this, and all the bases. By federal statute, the United States government cannot allow that to deteriorate until it has actually been recorded and deeded over to the claim. It must maintain it, and it did spend a great amount of money. I got the dollar figures back to the office to put the sewage and water system in a number one condition before it was transferred to the city of Albany. They're now negotiating the price, half of the appraised value, which always made me wonder, because the suggestion was made in the minutes of the council meeting of Albany was maybe they ought to let the university take over that, get that sewage and water included in its regular package, and they get it for nothing, but the city of Albany has to pay half of the appraised value. A public agency has to pay, and a private agency. I couldn't quite justify this. No one's been able to explain this to me yet, but I don't know if they have done that, gone that route. It was suggested by a councilman at this meeting, which I have a minute for. But that's just a situation.
Mr. Howard.
Has the rest of our congressional delegation been supplied with this one Wyatt, Congressman Alden, Edith Green, and Senator Von Packler?
You mentioned Congressman Wyatt, of course. There's no secret that he's very much a proponent of the United States International taking over this there.
Does he have this information that you have?
Chuck Hoyt, his representative, was in Salem on January the 23rd, attending the Republican caucus. At the same time, a story came out of A. Robert Smith in Washington, D.C., where Congressman Wyatt continued to say that Hatfield was late and shouldn't delay this transfer, but I will study his materials presented the previous day. You must remember Congressman Wyatt had been out of the country quite some time, too. So we thought it was only fair to show, before any more of this embarrassment center on any one individual. We did summon Mr. Chuck White to the Oregon Statesman on Saturday, January 23rd, in the afternoon, approximately 2 o'clock. And at that time, we showed him the material that we had and offered to show him any other documents he wanted to see. And his quote at that time was, "I've seen enough. I'm going to get the congressman on the telephone right now, and would you hold that story?" We agreed, our news editor agreed to hold the story at 8 o'clock. If necessary, we would communicate with our correspondent, Washington, D.C., A. Robert Smith, and hold Bill further in case he could not reach the congressman. We didn't hear any more, and the information, the story ran as stated without any changes.
Cindy, the last call I also made to Washington.
Let me finish his answer. On reference to Al Almond Green and Senator Packwood. Senator Packwood takes, I say be careful about this one. He's aware of the situation and Senator Packwood, and his sympathies are in with Mark. Senator Abdul, this is what is important to me. Almond and Green have taken a position. It's not in their district. It's not in their congressional district, and I haven't heard any response one way or the other. And I don't know how much information they've been supplied with. I was so busy, and especially in the last 3 weeks. Run down to going to press and build life section into it. Let's say I really didn't have a chance to communicate with anybody. And the other thing has been pointed out that we remember we started this investigation in late August, long before the Oregon Council for had even been organized. We just happened to end up possibly in the same position they are in, but it's only by accident, by coincidence. And the other statement I'd like to make is that the reason I got interested in this university is my brother is Donald Morris, and the president of a school teacher of a long time in San Diego, former Oregon school teacher at Hillsborough, and is president of the National Education Association, was elected, but he's actually president-elect, will take office next July in Detroit. And so we went to him to get his information on the university, and he had his wife, a formerly educated woman, do this. And they reported after a week that they could not get any information from the university, and that even their education writer, Ken Hudson on San Diego Union, a longtime education writer, reported back the same thing, and later the city editor reported that they've never been able to get information on this university, and that it was just a problem they've never been able to resolve. And they said they should have looked into this long ago, but they didn't have the staff or the time or one thing or the other, but anyway, it was never done.
Further questions? Thank you.
Yes. In reference to communication to our representative, the senators again, may I point this out? It's always, if you can see what they do to the newspaper when they don't respond, you can just imagine how they're poor. But the other thing about the Community and Chicano Affairs, the Poor People's Council, Valley Migrant League, wrote to all representatives. Senator requesting an investigation. The only one that responded was Senator Hatfield. The others responded that it was not, briefly, it was not their problem, it was TSA and HUW. And so that's where it stands in terms of the request. It's similar right now, similar thing that's happening in Eastern Oregon right now. The Chicanos are extremely concerned the problems that Chicanos are having in Eastern Oregon. And we requested Senator Almond, Representative Almond, to get concerned, and the legislators here, Uccioli and Bennett Smith, to this day, nothing is happening. The council of the poorest meeting there at 28th. Pardon?
You have copies of the correspondence?
We have copies.
And we have copies. That's right.
You can also have answers.
Well, I'd like both ways.
So, could we just, just for the sake of the people present, what is the process here? Does this then make a resolution to push it over to the House? Or
this is a committee that would take action, would go to the House, it's a joint memorial, it would just go to the Senate, and then on to Washington.
But you'd have to pass it first?
Yes.
And what of this comment that Mr. Morrison made that today the deed could be turned into all legal?
All I can answer to that is we can move as fast as we can. I think the point at the moment is to notify the proper people that this is in and there is an
Excuse me one thing. I might have misrepresented something to you. When I said that this could be happening any minute or any day, that's true. But also, and this is true, and this is important, is that the statutes allow the federal government to the reversionary power of the federal government on this land is so vast that they're almost a shaky cabinet in some of our landlord situations today. The government naturally can take it without any reason to want to, but would naturally have to have a reason. But if anything's been misrepresented, the government orders not putting, not utilizing it, or any many, many reasons, they can take it back anytime they want. They can take it back to say that they want it back.
I suspect you had some of those reasons documented.
Yes, we have all the federal statutes.
I thought you might. May I call the next witness?
Yes. Incidentally, the comment, the next witness made it a resolution also, the CPL. So, and then if the representative would like copies of the Council of Poor book, we'd be glad to get it.
Thank you. Sarah Powell.
I say in my own language, I've been down as far as you can go, and I have come back up now where that I am out of property, but yet I am not on East Street. So therefore, I would love to see Camp Adair made into a vocational training center for people that is in the situation that I have been in, where that they could get training, get off in welfare, get self-sustaining and supporting their children and rearing them where that in the long run they will have pride in themselves, pride in their state, and pride in just pride in the government which they help build.
Ms. Powell, may I ask, are you representing yourself or an organization?
No, I am the chairman of Umatilla and Morrow County of the CPL. Committee for Progress Through Law. I represent the two counties.
Questions, Ms. Powell? Thank you very much for coming so far. And I, like the chairman, am in a quandary. Robert Fabian? IAN is the last three letters.
My name is Robert Lothian. I'm from Eugene. I'm unemployed right now. I live on $26 a week, unemployment compensation. I know a group of people in Eugene who are also poor and really need Camp Adair. They need the housing. They need the building and warehouse, vocational training, the classroom. And well, Mr. Morrison was pretty, he seemed kind of in a quandary. He couldn't understand exactly what was going on. It's crystal clear as a bell for people in Eugene, you know, what is going on around Camp Adair. You know, they see a small group of rich, white businessmen, you know, engaging a business venture for profit on coming from out of state, using land and resources, which by any law of humanity and nature should belong to people in this state who need them. And that's the poor people in this state. And we see also the federal government, state government and the office of Governor Tom McCall cooperating with that university, with that group of businessmen, to help them make their profit. You know, while poor are constantly ignored, put down, slapped down, invisible. So, if you decide you get that land, I know a woman in Eugene who absolutely, and not in Eugene, but outside of Eugene, a town called Dexter, who had to live in a shack the last 2 years while those houses have gone vacant. You can see through the roof of the shack, you can see the sky through the roof, and there are cracks in the walls that big that the wind blows through. This is through the winter. So if USIU gets that land, I know a lot of people are going to consider that a crime, a criminal activity. If the legislature, wants to do something about it, what they can do is keep USIU out and make sure the people of the state who need those houses, who need those resources, you can make sure that they get them. Because, we don't have much faith in the so-called people's representative process anymore because it hasn't worked to this point. And just remember that it's an iron law of history that oppressed people have been slapped down again and again, are going to do anything it takes to get what's rightfully theirs.
I swear one thing we need to do, the legislature can't stop it. We can request, ask, plead more in line. We have no power over the federal government.
I'm in the Council of Poor in Eugene.
Are you a member of that? Mm-hmm. Questions, ladies and gentlemen?
How does the Council of Poor define a poor person? What's your definition?
I want to ask you that question. Have you ever seen a poor person? Have you ever talked to one?
You bet. I've been.
Have you ever seen someone live in a shack? Have
you
ever seen someone that has to live in a shack? They can see the sky through the roof and the wind blows through the wall. How long has it been since you lived in a situation like that? So don't sit up there and ask me questions like that.
I'll ask you any questions I want to, and I sat here patiently and listened to you while you were speaking.
You remember that you are offending many poor lives.
No, I'm not offending anyone, Chapo.
You are.
I'm asking how you define
a poor person. You offended me. You offended him. As a matter of fact, the question of title is an offense.
Well,
is it important even in titles?
You're using the
individual
title.
Thing.
Not me.
No.
You're saying that there are poor people who need to get there. Now I'm asking you this question by your head.
But did you see how offensive that
is? I may qualify.
That's like asking a black man if he's a black pastor. That's asking a Chicano, for instance, to lead a military.
Well, Mr. McPherson, do you intend to decide on that?
You mean, this insensitivity is a frustrating force. People are very insensitive.
Do you answer for everybody who's coming up here?
No, I don't.
I'll define a poor person.
Good. Thank you.
It's a woman who lives out in Dexter, Oregon, who looks up through her roof and sees the sky. She looks through the walls and sees the bushes on the outside, She wakes up in the morning and has the water in her sink, and it's frozen, who goes to bed at night and hears, you know, the rats scurrying around on her floor. You know, opens the cupboards in her kitchen, you know, and sees the cockroaches jump out in her face. You know, they can't provide, you know, clothes for a kid so they can go to school, you know, and feel a dignity that they can get along with their friends and other children in school, you know. They can't give them a lunch, you know, they don't have enough money to give them a lunch that they can take to school with. They get 3 square meals a day. When they do get home, they eat beans for dinner, you know. That's a poor person.
All right, simple as that.
You see, if this is not an advertisement, you came up here, and I think I've served you and your support, Eugene. You came to the welfare task force here, and you were a very bitter young man there, and you're a very bitter young man here, and you may have
done it. You bet I am.
Society may have done you a very dirty turn somewhere that I don't know about, and I'm willing to listen, but you have to allow me the freedom to ask you questions. I can't learn any other way. Now, if it won't offend you, I would ask, when you say that 4 people have been constantly slapped down, ignored, and I think those were the words, do you think that, what do you mean by that? Has the legislature been responsible? Who has been responsible?
Where did it happen? 3 or 4 different people got up here and went through it today. The whole process is how, you know, the poor people of Oregon are trying to get Camp Adair. Were you listening?
I've been listening most of the time. I was gone for half an hour. But is that what you mean by slapped down and ignored? What's been happening here today?
How we live slapped down. In other words, right here today, if we just look at it physically, how many are in this community? 13.
Well, this is
five. Did the 5 stay throughout? Did the 5 have the courtesy to get the whole total 60? This is kind of a slap. The fact that we recognize that the legislature doesn't have the power, but we know that the legislature has more power than the poor people. And we want the legislature or this committee to begin to voice their opinion against problems that are oppressing the poor. And this definition, I mean, really, Mr. Minister, I'm not really, you know, knocking you down or anything. I'm just telling you that there's a lot of insensitivity in regards to dealing with the poor. You know, it has to do also with minorities. You see?
Mr. Chairman,
so
this gentleman over here is a smart man. Now, this is a subcommittee of state and federal affairs, and there's 5 of us on it. Anybody that comes in here during the session will have this 5 people listen to their testimony. Now there's 1, 2, 3. Roger Martin, the chairman, has been here almost all afternoon, and I've been here since 1 o'clock. This is the same person. Here's another gentleman that's on the whole committee, but he's in here. He doesn't sit on this committee. We are not, you're getting exactly the same treatment as everybody else that comes in front of state and federal affairs this year will get. We're not just because these chairs are vacant. They're never filled, only when the full committee meets. Now you are smart enough to understand
that. That's right. But you must be smart enough to understand that many people don't understand it. And the fact is they see empty chairs, you see. The fact is, they make insensitive remarks like, what is a poor person? You know, everyone here is that smart.
This particular,
you know, what is a poor person?
Exactly this. I don't care if there's 10 millionaires come to testify in front of state and federal affairs. This is exactly what they'll see.
Well,
nothing different.
But you see our point, too. You see our point?
This is what your people should know.
Now you're explaining that to me, and I buy it. Now you explained it, now you buy this. And people ask very insensitive things to the poor. What is the poor person?
Well, so
how does the council define the poor? Well, right here, are there any millionaires?
Well,
Can we start with that? Okay, then you're not a millionaire. We can start with that. But are you poor? Do you own property? Do you have savings of up to 4 digits in the bank? Do you have a steady job? Okay, well, maybe 3 of those are missing. You're poor. If you want to get the categorized. I'm just saying it's a very insensitive thing to ask people.
You don't mind us asking questions,
Mr. Those questions I do mind.
You do. You protect me.
I'm not protecting you. I'm telling you, I'm reacting to that.
This young man seems righteous. We'll take care of himself.
That's right. And he did. You didn't like it.
When a young man comes in down before our legislative committee and he says, now remember that we feel that people's representative process has failed. And you much figure it out and says, remember that oppressed people will get things the way they want them. And I detected it in his voice, just a note of anarchy.
Just like the Birchers.
Despite.
The
yes,
Birchers say
correct.
That.
Correct.
That's right.
I listen to you. Will you listen to me for a minute?
Sure.
Or do you have that in your soul?
Sure.
Then the point is that I want to inquire a little bit about why you feel that way. Because I happen to believe that we can work within the system. As some lady testified to a school group who was trying to do that, I would like to see him work in the system with me, not against me, and I want to find out why he's mad. Now, if that's not a legitimate inquiry, then we might as well adjourn and go home.
You can put people in the council looking in the
system. I'm not certain. I have no previous connection with poor people.
Okay, can we ask you to know about the poor people's council?
You sure
maybe
did.
Maybe you, like some of the legislators, have
that's
done.
What I was trying to find out. I'm sure you're representing poor people's council.
Well, maybe okay. A bylaw for the poor people's.
If I belong to some other organization, somebody said, what is a Boy Scout, for example? If I were a Boy Scout, I wouldn't find that an insensitive question. He says he's here representing the poor people of council. I want to know what the eligibility are for membership.
Right.
Simple as that.
Human beings.
Now, I think that... you know, Robert. Excuse me for talking to Robert, Mr. Lowry. What?
How can you call me Cloudy?
Yeah. Okay.
Point,
you know what I'm trying to say now, and I've said it to Mr. Gentleman here. Do you really think then that today has been part of the process of slapping down and ignoring poor people? Because we held a hearing and we asked some questions of people who come to hear with
us. First thing I want to say is if this system was so representative of the people, how could you ask such an asinine question as what is a poor person? Poor person all around you, you know? They're invisible to you. You know, you have a nice suit, you know, a nice tie, you know, a nice income, you know? You know, why should you care about these so-called poor people, you know? And, you know, that's how you can ask a question like that.
You ever had a job?
Yeah, I've had a job.
How long ago?
This thing is a decent stop. Right now.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question.
The thing about this hearing is, you know, you know, the process up to this point has ignored poor people, and that's been documented again and again, and that's what I'm talking about, and that's what I said. Now, the legislature, you know, we'd be all for the legislature. We're asking you right now, you know, to do everything you can. You know, I asked before, make sure that USIU does not get that property, and that the people who need it, you know, people who don't have adequate housing, people who need those classrooms, you know, make sure they get it, you know, everything you can. And that, you know,
appreciate you coming back to what we're supposed to be here for. Do you have anything else to say on this transfer? That
that filled out those who have signed up, incidentally.
What's your name, sir?
Secondly, this committee is normally best from 1 to 3 o'clock. One reason some people are going in and out is they have other meetings starting at 3. So if you give us your name, sir, where you're from, and if you represent yourself or somebody, we'll take you and I'll talk to you during the year.
Fine. My name is Ray Eaglin. I'm the attorney.
Ray, what's your
name? Eaglin.
Would you spell it?
E-A-G-L-I-N. I would go back to one of the questions that was asked earlier. You said that you don't have any power but to take it back to the major committee and take it back to the Senate, which hopes to get it passed, and then back to Washington. And I think that
Morrison
stated that that all the government has to do is to say that it consented on this agreement. See, I always got confused about what I was talking about because I have been studying on very closely, and I wanted to address the question you made earlier, because we had did some research on what it was for persons. And the way we arrived at that conclusion was what he was not. And I think we started off that he did not own boots. Probably cost about $60 or $70, and an arrow shirt, and a silk skin suit, and set in a room, something like this, telling Bob Hope jokes on mahogany table. So we decided that that's what he wasn't, what a poor person was. And in the total scope of the relationship to a dare, it's like two cultures sitting in. It's as if that REP in front of you doesn't really stand for what it seemingly historically meant, a representative of the people. We should not be here telling you about Adair. You should be here telling us about Adair and why we did not get Adair. The we meaning the Oregon State, anybody, as opposed to a university or opposed to another private interest outside of the state. So maybe your information, just for our information, the information network is sort of logjam, because certainly you must have read in the paper where the council, the Poor People's Council, had a convention, a hearing, whatever you want to call it, in regard to problems around the state. And at that point, I don't know if that was an off-election year, I don't follow it closely. Off of an on-election year, you should have known that one of the things that, any one of the things that come out of it was a need, and that whole conference was about poor people in the state of Oregon. We were just reading an article, I forget what it was in, a form of almanac or something, about unemployable. So what is happening is that this technology, this cybernation and automation and all that stuff, is automating people out of jobs. And I think by the time you get to by the time whoever it is trying to take the space over, be it a dare or governor recall, whoever this is trying to
take over Adair, expand it away from the people, not make it clear where the responsibility of the base lie at this point, because we can't sign it either. So, what does all this mean to us? Now, what I'm talking about is the people who recognize the need for that facility to do something on regard to poor people. The question that you asked, what is a poor person? What constitutes that? Maybe something floating in blood around here too. Which means maybe this body can't take back, can't empathize with the need, the emergency of the need of that base, that facility, for our needs, to the Senate, this larger body that you're talking about, and probably the larger body, federal government. So maybe along with, what you're doing here today, you can take maybe a written statement from council and other people who want that base. Let them, let us, articulate that need, because if you don't know what a poor person is, it's almost the analogy of a firefly. He's born at 12 o'clock at night, he wouldn't know the conception of daylight and darkness in regard to what a poor person is. If you say that this body here was once poor. So what I'm saying is, it's hard for me, to sit back and really believe that you would take the total amount of need that we possess for that facility back to the Senate and back to the federal government if you don't know what a poor person is.
I would remind you, without discussions been going on, I think our problem right at the moment is to see what we can do to stop it. We're not really discussing where it's going. The memorial says, oh, let's take a look at it.
Clinton. No.
This is what the memorial directed to, is a question of stopping it for the moment so we can take time and see what's going on.
Yeah. Let me just do one thing before that anybody generates a question. We would be out of our minds if we really believe that what you just said. You really understood what we're talking about.
Ray, I'm pretty sure. Can I call you Ray?
Or you can continue to call me with your Mr. Eagle Earth within calling me.
I appreciate what a poor person is, and I think if you think about it on reflection, you'll know that I know what one is. I come from a county that has 16.8% on funds rate, which is far above the average. I'm a lawyer, and I've represented a lot of people from communes, including the Sky River people, and I know what poor people are. I ask the question for a purpose. I've met a lot of poor people. I've been in their homes and in their tongues. And I do appreciate, however, your approach to discussing the question of what a poor person is, and I think the right approach. And I thank you for taking a calm and dispassionate approach.
I know what you're probably going against the grain again, but my approach was the same as the man's approach that left you. All I was trying to tell you, though, specifically, talking to the people, all I was trying to tell you is that in your evaluation, let's go beyond the corporate humanity that you have missed on.
Well, I may have.
Because,
I just wanted to know what the Oregon Council is for. Who they are, and who they represent. That's all. Further questions? Thank you.
Yeah, I might as well pass on to what, what's your name again, Governor? Howard?
Howard.
Taking into political contact with inflation and realizing that I think it was a dime that George Wallace said that it was a dime system. I want to correct that if there's 6-cent difference between the Democrat and the Republican in regards to their issue.
Thank you.